Good afternoon. There are 49 days until the November 2022 midterm elections. That's 7 weeks until Brian, the election that is going to decide whether or not Americans want America to remain some semblance of a democracy. Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so sick of saying this. Hi, Dean. But there's so much going on. I'm not entirely sure where to start. But there are two actually good news things I want to start with. One's going to have to wait for reasons that will become obvious. And the other one is that yesterday, hello, Dahlia. I was just saying, before we start and get into the kind of horrors that unfold on a daily basis, there are a couple of good things that I wanted to mention. And one is that thanks in large part to the unceasing work of Rabia Chaudhry, Anand Syed was released after, 23 years of injustice. His conviction was vacated. And we can only hope that the prosecutors will spend the same kind of effort in what seems like a railroading of an innocent man to finding justice for Heyman Lee. That's what needs to happen next. So congratulations to everybody on Anand's team, and especially again to Rabia. I mean, that's the kind of tenacity it takes sometimes in America to get justice. So the fact that so many people never gave up is a testament, one, to them, and also to the steep climb sometimes in this country against getting justice. And on the other hand, how easy it is for other people to escape it. But we'll get there in a second. The other good news is that today is the day the phenomenal book, Lady Justice, written by our friend and fellow nerd adventurer, Dahlia Lithwick, is out in the world. Happy publication day. I hope it's not champagne because it looks orange and that would be disturbing. And it's only 12 o'clock, but it's publication day. So if you want champagne, go for it. Congratulations. How is it going?
Yeah, I mean, we should do a chapter on Rabia, right? Like another, yes. You know, to the extent that this is a book about dogged women lawyers who just
have as many volumes as the Encyclopedia Britannica for those of you young ones out there. We used to have these things called encyclopedias. And they were many, many volumes that covered, the knowledge of all of humankind. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it must have been difficult to choose your subjects.
I mean, it was not possible. And my original list was winnowed and winnowed and winnowed. And in the end, I was very clear, Mary, in the introduction to the book, that every one of these ladies is an avatar for 10 right. other and 1,000 other. And right. there was no way to limit it. I think I just wanted to tell stories and to find enough different kinds of character that anybody who read it could themselves in one of these women. But by all means, I think there could be tens and thousands of other subjects. It was more just to lift up the idea that we sometimes feel hopeless, particularly on this show, in this collective. But that, you know, I've said it many times and I'll say it again. I don't think the law is broken. I think there are lawless people who are manipulating the law. And so I just wanted to lift up the idea that the force of the law in the hands of good people is not something we should despair about yet.
And listen, you're hearing this from the show's resident cynic, lifting up. No, it is an incredibly hopeful book, and everybody. I'm not kidding. It's phenomenal. It's not that this should surprise us because it's Dahlia. It's extraordinarily well written. It's the narratives are compelling, and I get the opportunity to talk to Dahlia about it for a whole hour tomorrow. So I'm very excited about that. But, we don't have time for a deep dive today, but I did want everybody watching to know, if you don't already, that it's out there on sale, and you will be rewarded for reading it. It is quite compelling and timely. And you can't say that about a lot of books that have to do with, I mean, I know it doesn't just have to do with recent history kind of in terms of its intention, but, you know, obviously you're focusing on events that have occurred recently, but there is a much broader story there, and it is well worth everybody's time. And now we're joined by, reporter on the street, reporter at large.
She looks like she's being chased by paparazzi.
I know. Well, hey, she's in New York. You never know. So, Jen, just to catch you up, we're celebrating the fact that Dahlia's book is out today, and also celebrating the fact that Adnan Syed, thanks in large part to Rabia Chowdhury, is a free man for the first time, I think, since 1999, which is
23 years.
You know, we should both celebrate, and it should also send a chill down our spines. So, and that's a fascinating angle. Anyway, I'm guessing that Jen hasn't landed where she wants to go.
It's a nice travelogue shot, though.
It is a very lovely travelogue shot.
Who's the camera person?
Yeah, we need to talk.
You hired a camera person?
You know what? This is what it feels like, Brian. Just so you know.
Yeah. I think you need some selfie tips from George Hahn.
I was just trying to put my AirPods in my ears, and that required me to, you know, do that one-handed, so I apologize.
We always come prepared.
It sounded like you said AirPods, and I'm like, me and Brian are here for the AirPods. She said AirPods. I look forward to having Dahlia on my show. Can I just say, we're talking to her people. Dahlia, we're begging your people to get you on my show. We literally emailed again today going, what's up? What does Dean have to do to get Dahlia on the show? So we're going to hopefully next week or the week after have you on.
Dahlia is in very, very high demand. And although, I mean, I personally think that just a shout out by the Nerd Avengers is really, what else could you hope for?
It moves books. I mean, people should come on to the show to sell a book whenever they have one.
Somebody tweeted about it. Who was it? Somebody tweeted a picture of the book. Who? Oh, God, what's her name? Hillary fucking Clinton.
Wow.
Like everybody on Twitter.
What?
Dean, Lady Justice
Dean,
is a
if you were Hillary
read.
Clinton, you would be getting a response right
now. Dean, wait in line. I don't even know how I got so lucky. So it had something to do with a cash transfer, perhaps.
Wait. Did I hear that correctly, Dahlia? Hillary fucking Clinton?
Yeah, not
about your book while I was on the subway and I missed it?
She did, and it's amazing. But I want to make one serious point, if I may, the paparazzi can chase Jen down. One of the things that I keep struggling with on this show in all our conversations, especially when, you know, Danielle reminds us how crap the legal architecture is and that it was designed to be crap and it continues to be crap. And one of the things that's super interesting in the book is watching some of the different women sort of struggling with how the law has been used to oppress and break women for centuries. And that, like, so much of Justice Alito's opinion in Dobbs is, like, comes from that place of great contempt for women and their power and their autonomy. And I just, like, it's so interesting because so many of these conversations we've been having this spring and this summer pop up with these women who all are sort of like, of course the law is a tool of our oppression. It sucks. Like, I hate it, but this is what we have. And it's just, I'm so mindful of how many times we kind of go round and round on that question of, this is a horrible, horrible mechanism for doing justice and equality and dignity. And the second best alternative is, like, fighting it out in the streets.
Well, Dahlia, yeah. I just want to tell you, one of the people that inspired me most when I was young was my grandmother, who was a lawyer and one of the first women to plead a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Wow. And one of the things that her son reminded us of in a family meeting one time was that when she was getting ready to appear before the Supreme Court, her biggest concern was having the proper hat to wear to impress the Supreme Court justices. And her husband, who was also a lawyer, said, aren't you worried about the legal arguments? She goes, I can run circles around them. They're men. I have to have the right hat to be heard. So it hasn't changed much over the years.
No.
But it has, and
this is one of the things that Dahlia writes about that does help us recognize that there has been an evolution. You know, there, what is it? Half of law students are women, half of lawyers are women. It's still at the upper echelons that there's a huge disparity, but gains have been made. And ultimately, because representation matters, that hopefully will shift the swing of the pendulum. But sorry, Dean, go ahead.
I was just going to say, though, as we talk about the good, there's still the reality of what happened last week. Indiana and West Virginia both implemented laws banning abortion at conception, at day one of conception. If you're a woman in West Virginia or Indiana, your uterus becomes property of the state. And in West Virginia, the rape exception, if you want to call it that, 8-week window, and you have to file a police report 48 hours at the latest before you get your abortion or you can't do it. And nothing there in the law about what if the guy goes, no, I didn't rape her. It was consensual. You're not going to have the abortion then. So as we go forward, the law is being used right now, Dahlia, as Dahlia knows, to oppress women, even more extreme than anything we've seen in the last 50 years because of Roe v. Wade. So just, I'm not a downer. I'm actually an optimistic guy, but I'm saying the reality is look at this pendulum. Look how it comes back around. The fight never ends. The struggle never ends. The arc might be long and bend towards justice, but they're bending it the other way right now. So
yeah, and listen, it's not an arc; it's a friggin' EKG of a cardiac patient. I mean, right. You know, it's not bending; it's yeah, doing all
one that's on life support.
Yeah, or arresting. You know, so but listen, this show is never about bringing people down. It's about understanding that we need to stare squarely in the face of what's happening because, you know, deluding ourselves that things aren't that bad just means it just sets us up for failure. So we need to be very clear. And Dean, you're right. It's one of the troubling, I guess, innovations, if you want to call it that. And it's not new, obviously. Of course, this goes back to Jim Crow. But the extent to which it's not just that the laws are draconian, it's that they are injecting this level of vigilantism to skirt around those places where the extremism of the laws won't necessarily hold. Say, well, hey, it's not the government. It's these private citizens who are well within their rights to turn in the Uber driver who brought somebody to a Planned Parenthood. What am I kidding? There are no Planned Parenthoods left in Texas. But you know what I'm saying? It's that extra level of cruelty, deliberate cruelty that empowers all the wrong people. And that's, of course, as we know, also part of the system.
It doesn't make logical sense what they propose. The bottom line is if you're going to force people to have babies, guess what? The rich will always find a way out of it. The poor will be imbued in poverty forever and be forced to have children that otherwise they should not or could not or chose not to. It's only this type of legislation always hurts the poorest the most. And the damn frickin' fundamental truth of that is these are the very people that the far right don't like. They just want to into servitude. It's a
absolutely. Although, you know, Julie Zebrek, who was on with us a few weeks ago, pointed this out, and that one of the potential shifts here, because again, most privileged people in America only care about something if it's in their own self-interest or if it impacts them in some way. If I don't care how rich you are, if you're in Texas or was it Indiana that just passed a similarly extreme? Anyway, if you're in one of those states and you have an emergency and you don't have time to get on your private jet and go somewhere else, then what doesn't matter? You are going to be bound by the same restrictions. Your medical decisions are going to be made by the hospital's attorney, not your doctor. So, you know, this is where we are.
Really? I mean, Donald Trump seems to get away with everything. And I bet you he could roll up into a clinic with a girlfriend and go, hey, take care of her. And somebody would.
I'm not talking about somebody like Donald. I'm talking about some, you know, random person who has the means but doesn't necessarily have the pull.
But Mary, love your cats in the background, Mary.
They're, I see that.
Yeah, they're great.
And Mary, by the way, you know, in Texas, the law where they implemented a few weeks ago where a doctor can go to jail for life. Well, if you're a rich person and that's your doctor's gone too. It's like, you know, remember they like, Democrats want to come between you and your doctor. Republicans want to put your doctor in jail. Okay. That's and then Jim Jordan's going to be your doctor after that. And Kevin McCarthy's going to make your medical decision after that. And that's the
Lauren Boebert.
Oh
yeah. And listen, this is the problem with not dealing with these kinds of shifts when they start. Insurance companies have been dictating medical care for decades, taking the power away from the doctor. You know, your doctor is out of network, or your doctor wants you to get a procedure he or she considers necessary, and the insurance company's like, we don't think that's that. This has been happening for a very long time. So it's getting worse, but this is what it's not new. And this is what happens when we're not paying attention or we just kind of accept, well, you know, of course the insurance company has the last say. Why? It shouldn't be this way. And Dahlia just flagged this article on CNN with this quite horrifying headline. 4 out of 5 pregnancy-related deaths in the United States are preventable. And between that and the fact that in states like Alabama, maternal mortality rates for women of color are insanely high. Like, I think in Alabama, they are worse than in many developing countries. So I ask this question to myself all the time. In what way? Well, okay, let's assume that the word exceptional means good. In what way is America exceptional? You know, we can keep pregnant people alive long enough to give birth. You know, we don't care for children after they're born. And that's, I guess, one of the other, and it's funny, like this wasn't necessarily going to be the thing we're talking about today, but every day we hear more information coming out about how much more they're trying to get away with. And, you know, Lindsey Graham may have shown us his hand, but I don't think he's saying any
feminine hand.
Well, that would be an ad hominem attack. But I know it's Lindsey Graham, so who fucking cares? But still.
And those mortality rates, Mary, are 3 and 4 times
yes.
You know, for women of color. So it's not even
exactly
just, you know, that the mortality rates are unnecessarily soaring. It's that, of course, this impacts women of color, you know, multiple times more heavily, particularly in those states that you're naming. And I would just say one other thing. I did a briefing last week about all the universities that now have had months to figure out what their policy is around the country in terms of abortion access, in terms of birth control, in terms of emergency contraception, and an amazing study in the Meteor that just was done by a young woman. And almost none of the schools have a policy. Their policy is dictated by lawyers, dictated by insurers. And the policy is essentially, we don't know what our policy is. But on reflection, it occurred to me that one of the purposes of this is to make sure that young women aren't really interested in going to college, right? If you know that you're going to school and that there's absolutely no mechanism by which if you are raped or if your birth control fails and you can't terminate a pregnancy because your parents can't helicopter you to New York City, why would you go to school there? And I think one of the things we haven't thought about is the ways in which all of this is being done in this like Handmaid's Tale creepy funnel to send women back to places before they have opportunities. And I think it's just utter, like, there is no excuse that for every university in the country not to have a stated policy post-Dobbs of how they're taking care of young women.
Along with the American Medical Association. I have to go make sure my house doesn't burn down because the doors just opened. So please continue and I will be right back.
Look at, can we just look at Mary's apartment? Mary has a fireplace.
That's a fireplace.
That's about, it's a, the fire's about to leap out of the fireplace though. So I'm going to go take care of that. It's like an action show. I'm turning off the camera.
While you were talking though, is I saw Jen walking on the street and then she disappeared. I hope she's okay.
New York City is a terrifyingly dangerous place,
especially when you're walking across the street with the light. But
yeah, while looking at a phone. But okay, I'll be right back. Keep talking.
Mary has to save her apartment. If her apartment goes in the flames, this is a very special episode of the Mary Trump Show. Like this would be a collector's item.
It will be the last. It will be the last Mary Trump.
Well, I guess maybe we shouldn't laugh so much then. But
she'll return. Look, it's Danielle. Hey, yeah. Danielle Moody.
Hi.
Nice to see you, my friend. I haven't seen you in a while.
Let me ask you a question, Dolly. When you talk about women being put at ill at ease with this decision and even more so keeping them from going to college, I remember a very poignant story when I was younger. Someone very close to me had to have an abortion, and there was a question at the time, even though abortion was legal, and God knows this was in Missouri. There was a real, real concern about being able to stay in school. Now she went on to, and actually she is a lawyer now. I've known her for many years, but how can steps should a university take immediately to make sure that women are safe?
It's funny, Brian. I had a similar conversation yesterday with a friend whose grandmother died in childbirth, like on her way to a, you know, soaring career. And you know, we forget how lethal childbirth really still is, how much more dangerous it is than abortion. I mean, it seems to me that in the 2 weeks after Dobbs, every single school should have figured out, sat down with their lawyers, figured out what the state trigger bans were, figured out what the state law was, what was coming into play, and talked to their, you know, health system and figured out what provision they were making. And not only did they not do that, but as I said, this inquiry comes back almost completely empty, where all of them say, we're going to try to make sure our students are safe. I mean, that's not an answer. If your students were being hit by cars, you'd have a policy in place to treat them. You know, they're terrified to set a policy because they depend on out-of-state tuition, right? They really desperately don't want to have students that won't attend. But I think, you know, in my view, and I'm the mother of a 19-year-old and 17-year-old boy, if you're sending your kid to college in this fall and you don't have answers about are they going to be prosecuted if your sons drive their partner, to out of state or to a clinic, I would want to know that information. And I think
these are the same universities and colleges that have for as long as we can all remember have had, you know, rape prevalent on their campuses, right? Like we know that young women, what is it? It is about, I think that it's like 1 in 5, right, will potentially be raped or sexually assaulted when going to university. And these are statistics that we have all just shrugged at and said that, well, that's a part of going to college. That's a part of collegiate life. And so it's not really a shock to me that you wouldn't see universities and colleges turn around and say, these are the steps in which we are keeping people safe. Because you had, if you remember, when Betsy DeVos was Secretary of Education, she did a fucking apology tour around these universities and brought together young men that were wrongfully accused of sexual assault and rape and what about their lives, and then made the bar that much higher to be able to prosecute men on campus for sexual assault and violence against women. And so it makes perfect sense that then you would set up a mechanism where you have never made safety a priority for young women on campuses. So this would just be a continuation of what they've been doing since the beginning of time.
You know, I asked that for a reason. And you know, Mary, you had said before you went to put out the fire, you did it incredibly fast. We're all proud.
I didn't have the right fireplace tool on hand, so I did my best. My hands are a little...
But the reason why I asked that is I recently returned from a country that I think if we don't change in the U.S. is indicative of where we're going to be in 20 or 30 years. And that's in Lebanon, where there is corrupt politicians. 4 of the 10 richest people in the Middle East are corrupt Lebanese politicians. They don't even have oil there. And 4 of the 10 richest people are there. But many people live before the poverty level. Women cannot get any kind of health care or services because it's a male-dominated culture. There's no infrastructure. There are portions of Lebanon that are without water or electricity for 2 years. We talk about Jackson. We talk about Flint. We talk about Texas. And I just see that as politicians, if fascism does creep into the United States any further, I keep looking at what we would end up like, and it scares the living crap out of me when I was in Beirut, because it reminds me of where we could go.
Yeah. And I think, Brian, there are a couple of test cases that are unfolding right now, but I know, Dean, you've got to leave in a couple of minutes. So I just wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on anything.
I think when you bring these all together, the scary thing is when you tie in the oppression of women and we talk about fascism and the election deniers and the GOP and Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott's dehumanization of Latino human beings. They're human beings. I know migrants a term you have to use, but they're human beings. This is really you're seeing a GOP that has, it's beyond compassion, it's beyond cruelty. It is the mindset that can lead to crimes against humanity. And I don't say that to scare people, but to prepare people. We're dealing with, if you can force a woman who is raped to carry the fetus of the rapist a term, you can do anything.
Even a 10-year-old.
Right, exactly. I mean, you can do anything in a bad way. If you can lie to migrants who simply are looking for a better life. My dad was a refugee, a Palestinian refugee. The idea, I think, of him, like you lie to him to get him on a plane to fly somewhere and not even alert the authorities they're coming. You could do anything. So I would say this to alarm people. We are dealing with, you know, people go, like, can it happen here? We've talked about it. It's happening here. This last week, I just wrote about it for CNN. In 7 days, Ron DeSantis, Greg Abbott, 2 abortion bans, Donald Trump embracing the storm of QAnon, where they're going to execute his political enemies. And that is rally, the one arm salute, and election denier elected for the Senate nomination in New Hampshire. So you've got, we're dealing with something where this is our challenge of this generation. Generation before had to stand up to fascism and cross an ocean and go on a battlefield. Here, because of their sacrifice, we just have to vote on November 8th. It's only 49 days away. So my whole thing, so I have to go for pre-tapes on my show, is this has been such a scary week in GOP extremism and the march towards fascism. And I just fear that there are people who aren't paying attention. We all are. Anyone watching this, Mary, is paying attention. Getting our friends who aren't, to make a case to them. Forget the word fascism. This isn't normal. This is not the country you want. And we have a chance to save it. But I got to go. I love all of you.
Love you, Dean. Thank you.
Take care. Bye, Dean.
Bye. I want to say pick up on something that Dean said, and it was such a wonderful way that he exited today. But I want to pick up on the way that the media has continued to be complicit in the normalization of of the dehumanization of people. Right? Think about the ways the headlines have been showing, you know, what Abbott and DeSantis are doing, and they've been couching it as a political stunt. They've been couching it as if it is just like a high school prank that is happening, that these governors are doing, as opposed to referring to it as human trafficking, as opposed to a humanitarian crisis and cruelty, right? These are not the words that are being used in the media. And so, you know, this is, you know, when you talk about, I hope fascism doesn't creep in, it's here, right? Because when you have instances that are happening like this, where people are being lied to and abused in their most desperate time, and all we're doing is saying, well, you know, this is how Abbott and DeSantis are protesting. This is not a protest. This is cruelty. This is brutalization. And this is abuse. And the media is complicit in it because they are not even giving it the type of attention, right? And using the necessary language to draw attention to what is happening. If this were happening in any other country, you would be hearing the UN talk about it. You would be hearing Amnesty International. You would be hearing these places, right? It would be international news, right? Yeah. And so I think that it isn't, you know, this is about control and body and all of these things. And Dean was right. If you can force a woman to have a baby, if you can just pick up human beings and drop them wherever you want, the next step is just like execution, right? And in saying, well, this is my castle doctrine, and I'm able to kill these people because I fear for my life or whatever it is. Like, this is how violence escalates.
Can I ask a question real quick? When 90% of what you see, read, or hear is owned by six companies, and the board of directors of those six companies are mostly rich white males, so there's maybe 40 or 50 people in the country determining what you see, read, or hear most of, what do you expect?
Yeah.
The bottom line is you got to bust up those media monopolies and diversify media ownership and make sure that people of color own media and are reporting.
Can I say one other thing? Just sorry, Mary, I know I'm interrupting, but I think the other thing, and we have talked about this so often, that Trump rally is covered as spectacle. It's covered as theater. It's covered as this amazing, astonishing, look at them pointing and listen to the creepy music, instead of being covered as like a freaking existential horror show. Yep. And, you know, I keep thinking, I mean, it's hilarious that we started with the fact that it's a book launch for me today. But so many people have book launches where they put kids in cages at the border. They kept secrets. They didn't say what they knew. They did not report. They took no action. And now they have a bestseller. And it's so astonishing to me that we put the spectacle and the visceral shock and the excitement and the thrills and the spills first, because it's quite literally human rights as reality TV. I mean, what Danielle just described is it's like Hunger Games performance art. And we just watch it and we're like, hey, you know, 1 point for the pointers and the chanters and 1 point for the people who are shipping folks to Martha's Vineyard, as though this doesn't touch us. This doesn't say what our soul become.
I can attest, first of all, that Dahlia Lithwick did not hold back any state secrets that damage national security, if she had revealed them in real time. And, you know, the other thing about that, Dahlia, is that so many of those people coming out with those books are so-called journalists. Why is there no that sounds like malpractice. It sounds like something that a responsible employer would not allow, you know. I mean, if only from an economic standpoint, because there's scoops that are being denied to the employer, basically. I mean, I personally would have been interested to know in real time all of these things we're hearing about in these books, or that we're hearing about from witnesses in the January 6th committee. So it's that, and it is the tenor of the coverage. And you know, to Danielle's point earlier, I think it is a problem of language. Bye, Brian. And I know, Dahlia, you have to leave, sir. I just want to quickly say that the left has people on the left have a tendency to use the same language. I hear lots of people calling it a stunt. They may be qualifying it as cruel, but you know what? A cruel stunt is something that happens in fraternities and hazing. This wasn't
a block of ice. It's not the same thing.
This wasn't a stunt. This was a calculated political move meant to endanger people because of their status. It was a deliberate political attempt to other people and increase division and, score points, but in what way? And the other thing, too, is that I don't recall Joe Biden's speech being covered by any of the
Hey, that's one of my biggest gripes. You are absolutely right. And we don't cover – Biden had an excellent speech. He spoke for a half hour, then stayed another half hour on the South Lawn, shaking hands. And only thing we heard were excerpts where his stuttering was used to prove that he's mentally incompetent, which isn't true. He's been a stutterer for his entire life. To use that in such a manner is very frustrating. And Danielle, to your point earlier about and Mary, your point about why doesn't the media press, you know, why didn't we come out sooner and ask, why are you holding secrets back? We did. The problem is that doesn't get reported because of the reasons that I spoke about earlier. And there is a real, it's frustrating to me as a reporter in that White House right now to see that we gave all this attention to Donald Trump's crap. And then, look, I'm not saying.
Brian, I'm sorry. This is the second time I'm interrupting you. I'm so sorry. That's but it's right. Because Dahlia has to leave in 4 minutes. So then you'll have the floor again. But Dahlia, I did want to give you a little bit of time to do. I'm just going to keep stepping on Brian's toes. No, I'm kidding.
It feels good. I love it.
Dahlia, anything you want to say before we send you off to I have no doubt you're just going to be kicking back and relaxing for the rest of the week.
No, I mean, I want to say thank you for the kind words to all of you. I want to just say I'm going to miss this part of the conversation, but I'm super fascinated by Donald Trump trying to rope-a-dope a special master, the one that he asked for, that he insisted upon having, and that he said, once this is in place, this is a system that I can accede to, only to turn around and say, oh, I can't tell you which documents I declassified. So I'm going to leave you with this question, which is, I know, Mary, the start of every show, which is the noose really closing? Like, is this in fact the beginning of the end? And I no longer say, you know, this is the circling the wagons and the noose is closing and the walls are closing in. Like, every one of those metaphors no longer persuades me. But I will say, I think this is a really interesting moment where I feel that Trump's attorneys are boxed in because they cannot perjure themselves. I don't think they're prepared to lie in front of a judge and live with the consequences. And so I'm not going to be here to hear your answers. But I do feel like if I were to use the word inflection point, and I don't use it because I hate it, I think this might be an inflection point, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
But I'm going to use it anyway.
I'm going to say goodbye and see you soon. And thank you all for your amazing work. And just say, really, I think what both Danielle and Brian are saying today, I think, is sort of my A number one thing, which is, we in the media are not entertainment. We are not here to profit. We are not here to market ourselves or our brands. We are here to hold powerful people to account. And if we fail to do that, we are absolutely responsible for what comes next. Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Bye, Dahlia. Bye, love you. Good luck.
Love you too. Bye.
You know, I just saw somebody on Twitter say, Donald's attorneys are finding out, much to their chagrin, that Donald doesn't control the entire federal judiciary. I mean, it remains to be seen whether he does or not. But
he doesn't control himself.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. It looks like Judge Deary may have been a misstep on their part. And I have to be honest with you. I know nothing about this man except what we've learned in the last few days. I was nervous about him simply because Donald picked him. Right. Like, if Donald is picking him, there must be some nefarious reason. And somebody wrote a bit about why, speculated a bit about why. And Deary was in New York in the 80s at a time when Donald was allegedly working with the mob and doing all sorts of things that he was never shockingly held accountable for, while other people around him were. And you know, maybe Deary didn't do some things he should have. I'm not sure. But again, just by virtue of the fact that Donald picked him, it's like, So when the DOJ agreed, I thought this is potentially very worrisome. Those fears seem not yet to be borne out. And it does seem that Judge Deary is cutting right through it to get to the heart of the matter. And we're supposed to be finding out some things today. I think there was something at noon and something at two. I wish we had that information now. But Brian, it seems that Donald may have overstepped in this particular case.
Oh, I think
let's keep in the back of our mind, though, that the execrable, whatever her name is, Cannon, so-called Judge Cannon, has left herself the power, I think, to shift gears and get rid of Deary. I'm not entirely. I mean, it would look so bad. Although these people don't seem to give a shit if they look bad or not. They're just going to put their heads down and brazen their way through it. But that having been said, it does look like a failed gambit on Donald's part at this point.
Well, as a friend of mine in the DOJ said, she initially made the decision because she didn't want to make a decision. She wanted she wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, that Donald Trump would have no other place to go if you know, he's always going to gripe about it. It's a delay tactic for him. At the end of the day, most people in DOJ don't think it's going to matter. The fact that she was an appointee of Trump's and so is the special master, I worry less about that than I used to, because when we sued Donald Trump and I kept my press pass when he tried to remove it, it went before a panel of three, two of whom were appointed by Donald Trump, and they didn't find for Donald Trump. Donald Trump appointed those judges, but he wasn't the one who vetted them. They gave him a list and they go, here. And he goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so some of them have, you know, legitimate credentials. And so I worry less about that. I think at the end of the day, Donald Trump is going to be indicted. I think he's going to, I think Matt Gaetz is going to get indicted. I think a whole shitload of them are going to get indicted. But it's the wheels of justice turn slowly. While committing a crime is very, very easy to do. And in Donald's case, he's been doing it for years and tries to get away with it. But I think you're right. I think at the end of the day, this particular move will backfire on Donald Trump.
In the meantime, though, Danielle, he is getting away with it. And this has always been the concern since 2015, well, forever, but you know, for our purposes, since 2015, and I know this is repetitive, but it bears repeating because he continues to play by the same playbook and it continues to work. We have now a situation in which, 6 years ago, he was saying despicable things, and people were sort of passively accepting them or agreeing with them. And then he has these stupid fucking rallies after the 2016 election, and he's advocating for violence against people people at the rallies who just don't happen to agree, you know, they're there to maybe protest or what have you. And he's advocating for violence. And now in 2022 in America, he's having rallies in which, let's face it, these people are giving Nazi salutes. I don't care if they're holding up a finger or not. The symbolism is obvious. The echoes are clear. So, yeah, okay, he's going to get indicted, but unless somebody puts a fucking muzzle on him. Well, seriously.
The mental image of that alone is worth the price of admission.
Yeah. But
often watching him in the White House. I would love to see him muzzled. Let him run by a leash and leather.
Look, I don't know if we're going to get to lock him up, but, you know, put a muzzle on him. That works. So,
you know, it's what I always find really like the thing that is not consistently lifted up outside of, like, you know, our progressive bubbles is just how, you know, wealthy, white, well-connected, powerful men get to do whatever the hell that they want. And right. that we have multiple levels of a justice system. It's not even two different levels of a justice system. We all know that you can't run into a theater and yell fire, right? We all know that, like, you would be held to account for any of the things that you were saying, that even if one of us used our Twitter platform and said anything remotely that seemed as if we were insinuating that people take up arms and, you know, and accelerate violence in any type of way, we would be hauled in, right? And so the fact is that Donald Trump, I continue to say, he is a national security threat. He is extraordinarily dangerous. You yeah. watch these rallies, you see these people. I don't need to be told what a fucking Nazi salute looks like. I don't need you to tell me, you know, that these are not hate rallies because what? People aren't in KKK outfits. Like right. the reality is that we know who the base is. We know who Republicans are championing. And we know that Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump were really strategic in who and how they were placing federal judges around this country. We can ask ourselves, you know, Judge Cannon should not have that job, does not have the experience to have a lifetime appointment, right? We know that she was forced in after Donald Trump lost the fucking election. So in and of itself, she is illegitimate. But we also know that Democrats are not going to take anyone to task and continue to operate with a set of rules that Republicans have long since thrown out. So we're going through all of these hoops, right, with the special master and, you know, and you have this timestamp and this timestamp for you to continue to lie to us. And we know that they're lying and we keep operating with the sense of above board, right? And like following law and order that they don't follow and or believe in. Mm-hmm. So like at the end of the day, like, do I think that Donald Trump is going to be indicted and we'll see the inside of a prison cell? No. Do I think that there are some people around him that may in fact fall because they don't have the resources and the political maneuverings that he has access to? Yes, right? But Donald Trump didn't arrive at being Donald Trump because, like, you know, because there weren't a whole host of people that have allowed and accepted him to be this way, right? Yep. And do I think that do I think that it's going to backfire? Yes, because he said, okay, if you were saying that these documents have been declassified, just show me proof that they've been declassified.
Doesn't matter.
We can wrap this shit up.
That yep. doesn't matter. That's the
it
whole
thing. It also doesn't, yeah.
Those,
but, yeah. But the point is,
they were kept, so it doesn't matter whether they were classified.
Right, right. But the point is that even that little step of saying, okay, if you're arguing this point, then show me some evidence of the point that you're arguing. And then them turn around and say, well, we can't tell you that. But Judge Cannon was the one that says, well, we should just believe him. And what right. about his reputation? Right? Every judge, regardless of whether or not they were appointed by Donald Trump, some of them actually do give a shit about their careers, do yeah. care about their legacies, right? Do care about being seen as upstanding within the legal community. And I think that you're going to see that, like, that crop of people thin out who are willing yeah. to put their reputations on the line for a criminal.
Well, we're going to see. And, you know, for what it's worth, which is probably nothing, I do think he's going to be indicted.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter until he actually is. Okay. And then we can shift gears. But
I do think he'll be indicted too, Maria. And Daniel,
but he hasn't been. So,
but to your point, Daniel, I don't know that he'll ever see the inside of a prison cell.
I don't think he will.
He might have an ankle bracelet and be, you know, stopped at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, but that's like paradise for him. So, yeah, like, so what fucking difference? His life wouldn't change one
bit. In the DOJ that are convinced at this point that there are multiple cases where he can be indicted. I think he may face, and I do think that the Manhattan District Attorney's office and what they're pursuing now is also going to be detrimental to Donald Trump. And that's actually the one thing that could end up pushing, because that was before he was president. That investigation, which Michael Cohen, they won't rely on Cohen because they don't trust his word, they say. So now with Weiser, they're going to try and get with his accountant, trying to get that information. If they're successful in getting that information, I think that's the one case where Donald Trump could actually look at serious jail time. But I doubt it.
Yeah.
But
we have been saying for I don't know how long. Well, there's this case going on. There's Georgia. There's New York. There are these not criminal. There are these civil suits.
Yep.
Judge Deary just increased exponentially the speed at which this is going. So the indictments are going to. Okay, fine. Again, I'm not holding my breath. But what we see is, and this is tangentially related, is are increasing examples of the inability of. Well, okay. The system is working as it's designed to. So the increasing number of cases in which powerful white men are getting away with horrible crimes. We now have 3 sitting governors. There are probably more, but just off the top of my head. Greg Abbott in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Ron DeSantis, or Hades, in Florida, and Tate Reeves in Mississippi, who are getting away with crimes against their own constituents or against people who applied for asylum legally in this country and were trafficked and kidnapped. And just like in terms of Mississippi, like there's this horror unfolding in Jackson, the capital city of the state, in which people still don't have potable water. Is the city government at fault? Well, yes, but who is ultimately responsible for a crisis that occurs in a state? I would think it's the governor, who probably, you know, misused funds. And we know this has been happening in Mississippi because Brent Favre,
received millions of dollars.
Yeah, some probably very rich guy already, like, was, I mean, it's, the story is, like, so maddening. They paid this guy $70 million to get a fucking volleyball stadium for his daughter, which he probably could have paid for by himself. They diverted funds that were meant to help people, you know, just to like get their I'm having so much trouble. Sometimes my brain just kind of gets short circuited with I had to put out a fire. So, you know, I got a little stressed and distracted. But, you know, they diverted funds from state programs that were meant to help poor people. But who cares about them anyway? And then Tate Reeves, who was he's not directly responsible for the thing with Brett Favre, although I have no doubt in my mind he's connected to it somehow and knew about it. He literally said this during a speech a couple of days ago. I've got to tell you, it's a great day to be in Hattiesburg. It's also, as always, a great day to not be in Jackson. First of all, you fucking racist. Secondly, you are a criminal who is directly responsible for the tragedy, the preventable tragedy unfolding in Jackson, Mississippi. And yet, what is going to happen to him? What, he's going to get reelected.
He's
going to get reelected. And there's no. Here's the thing: is that we watch these stories unfold, and for 5 minutes of our attention, we say, we shake a finger. Oh my God! Look at how horrible. Meanwhile, that governor, that piece of shit, had his own water tank in front of the governor's mansion, which is paid for out of those tax, out of his constituents' pockets, in front of his own home. That man was not with even pretending to care, because they don't have to anymore. They don't even have to pretend to put on, you know, the construction outfit and let me go and pass out water bottles because I'm pretending to give a shit about your vote. Right? Like, we've moved past that. And without accountability, without the Department of Justice saying, you know what, all of you are going to be investigated for violating civil rights, for violating human rights, for trafficking, for endangering the public and well-being. Like, if you're not going to hold anybody accountable, then the crimes, Mary, like you said that they are, become bigger and bigger and bigger. All of them just, they become overwhelming. And then at some point, when they're not prosecuted, they're no longer crimes. And it's just bad behavior.
And then, Danielle, you're back to Lebanon, what I pointed out earlier, where they have to have, where the rich people have nice large cisterns of water, they have their own generators, and the poor people are fucked. And it is, I'm sorry, but the governor of Mississippi, that no good, whiny piece of shit, shit in his own bed. I'm sorry in person, but he's shit in his own bed by saying, a good day not to be in Jackson. Hey, pal, it's your state.
Yep.
You're just shit all over yourself. I hope the people of Mississippi, those that are cogent and are registered to vote, remember that. Because the simple fact of the matter is, he put himself above the people when he said that, and he was proud to do it. And that kind of pride is dangerous. And by God, that is the problem with this democracy. If we don't clamp down on those type of politicians who and vote them out of office, that, you know, today is National Get Registered to Vote Day. Register and vote these sons of bitches out before we end up like Lebanon in 20 years. And none of us have water or electricity unless we're rich enough to have our own generators and water cisterns. That was
Brian, it's not 20 years. It's not 20. That's the thing, is that on all of this has
we'll get there soon.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get there soon. Yeah. But in 20 years, it'll look just like Lebanon today.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure it will take that long. But, you know, I think the one of the main messages we need to get across to people is that this is not about politics anymore. It just is not.
Survival.
I mean, how is whether or not people have, American citizens in 2022 have clean drinking water a political issue?
Yeah, we're supposed to be the richest country and the shining example on the hill. You know, they have a class 3 warning to go to Beirut. You know, it's not safe there. You could get shot. You could get kidnapped. I'm going, no different than Memphis.
Right.
It's fucking worse than places.
It's worse in the United States.
It's worse because it's accepted. It's normal in a lot of places. Like, it's not like rogue people walking around with AK. Anybody can walk around with a fucking AK-47.
Yeah, we accept multiple shootings every day. Mass shootings, part of the daily landscape.
All right, don't get me started about, we're definitely going to talk about gun control one day, but right now I just can't. We don't have a lot of time left. I just wanted to shift gears a little bit because another issue that's related to all of this that also shouldn't be political is, and Danielle referred to the DOJ earlier, but like, why is it like some sheriff in some town in Texas?
Bear County, San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah. And I know, I'm sure it's a jurisdiction issue, but like, I don't know, like, wouldn't an attorney general of a state want, obviously it's Texas, so it's not going to happen. And this is the thing, we have allowed for so long political people in jobs that shouldn't be political. That's judges, that's law enforcement, and the trends have always been towards the right. So it's like, I have to confess, I was shocked when I found out a sheriff in Texas was going after a Republican governor, and I shouldn't have been. We should be shocked that this guy is still in office and not, you know, having to hire attorneys and not having to resign and all of that other stuff. So
that's a little more progressive area of Texas. And the fact that you're right.
But it shouldn't matter, right?
You're exactly right. But the fact is that what's scary about that is there's the high, as you pointed out, there's the highest guy in Texas to take a whack at him. Now, granted, it's one of the top largest cities and largest counties in Texas. Granted, it's more progressive, but why didn't the Secretary of State? Why didn't the Attorney General? Why didn't someone else step up?
Well, we know why, but yeah.
Why? Because
not a good answer.
The Attorney General of the state of Texas used to watch all of the executions and cheer them on in Texas. That state has been reprehensible since Ann Richards left it. There has not been a decent politician in the state level in Texas since then. And by God, they are probably one of the worst places ever to live. And God knows I live there. It's horrible. Sorry.
No, and it's only going to get worse, right? And you know, I don't know. Can a Democrat win a statewide race in Texas?
Yeah, there are people. The problem with Texas is not that Democrats can't win. It's that they have in Texas, it's very hard to get a Texas Democrat across the state who can appeal to the wide variety of people that you have to, where it's very easy for Republicans to scare the shit out of you in Texas. All they do is point at the border and go, they're coming. We got to run. And they'll scare the crap out of you. And they'll vote Republican every time, even minorities, even women, but now with what's happened this past year, I think there's a real chance for Texas to go back to the Ann Richards Texas. She was the last good, successful Democrat in that state, and she did it by appealing across all kinds of divisions within that state, and she brought them together in a coalition. Very smart.
Yeah, that seems like it was forever ago. Texas is a very different place.
You know what I would just say? What should appeal to people in Texas is a governor that won't leave you out literally in the cold because the power grid what should have people rally in Texas is not being left in 120 degree heat. And again, your power grid failed because your governors and your Republican politicians have privatized it.
And I think
right?
You still right.
have to pay your energy bills.
Just a little idea. Just a little idea.
I don't know what I guess I kind of want to do over. I want to rewrite. I think the next show we're going to rewrite the Constitution. And, you know, we're going to see what we can come up with. So we don't have to keep dealing with a country in which more than half the states, I think it's 26 states, just really, really, really want to take us back to 1960. In 1960, what am I kidding? 1860. Sorry.
Yep.
All right. Well, we are going to leave it there for today. I cannot wait to talk to you guys about what's probably unfolding as we speak with these hearings in front of the special master. I think it's going to be fascinating. It might even be really funny, which would be good because we could use a little bit.
I could use a little laugh.
Yeah, we could totally do that. So Danielle Moody, Brian.
He's a master of his domain. I'll put it that way.
Danielle Moody, Brian Karam, Dahlia Lithwick, whose book you need to go out and buy, Lady Justice. It's phenomenal. Jen Taub, a reporter at large who just disappeared. And Dean Obadala, thank you guys so much for being here. I will see you next Tuesday.
Have fun.
Bye. That was a very quick break. Thank you all for being here today. It was so good to have you here 49 days out from the midterm elections. And thank you, of course, to my Nerd Avengers and for all of your great comments. I was happy to see there weren't any racist trolls lurking, at least as far as I could tell. Okay, so as I mentioned during the show, I have the great honor of having a one-on-one interview with Dahlia Lithwick, who is phenomenal and who is also my friend, which makes me quite happy. And that is going to be Thursday, 2 days from now, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on youtube.com/politicon. And then, of course, in a week, on Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, we will The Nerd Avengers and I will reconvene. Also, youtube.com/Politicon. And while you're on Politicon's YouTube page, please subscribe to Politicon's YouTube channel. Doesn't cost anything. It just, we really want to keep building our numbers. And you can like the episode and leave a comment if you'd like. Also, click on this bell, because this way you will be sure to be notified every time a new video drops. And I'm putting out some shorter videos. I just had one come out, I don't remember when, a couple days ago, I guess. Anyway, please check that out as well. Share links with friends who might be interested in the show. And of course, you can, as always, listen to the show in podcast form on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And it would be great if you could give us a 5-star review, leave a comment. It really does help other people find the show. And that's the goal here. Everybody I have on deserves to have a broader audience. And with 49 days out, we have a lot of people to inform, a lot of people to convince, perhaps. So let's make this a full court press. That is it for today. I will see you Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. In the meantime, please stay safe and be kind.